This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, good evening and welcome to the John Whitmer Show. Happy, I guess, New Year. We're close enough. Close enough for government work at any rate. Thrilled to have you with us this evening here at your local liberal resistance headquarters. Always a pleasure to be with you as we, especially this time of year, belated Merry Christmas for those of you who are joining us again if you missed us last week. And again, wish you a preemptive Happy New Year. If you want to connect with us, our studio lines are open 316-869-1330 by email at john@knssradio.com, on Facebook and True Social at The John Whitmer Show, and on X at John R. Whitmer. Reach out, would love to connect with you. We've got a great show for you tonight. I sat down with the Sedgwick County Republican Party held their holiday, you know, Christmas / New Year's party in conjunction with the Estes team yesterday. So I sat down with our 4th District Congressman yesterday, a little exclusive interview. We'll play that for you here in to kick off our 8 o'clock hour. Curtis Houck from Newsbusters will join us to review some of the top news stories from 2024, the biggest lies of the year. And the winner of their annual Brian Stelter Memorial Award for the worst quote of the year, which is something that folks at the Media Research Center have been doing every year. And it's always fun to find out who, the left is just full of lies and bad quotes. It's always fun to hear who they give their worst quote of the year to. Paula Scanlon from the Riley Gaines Center will be with us to explain why the Biden administration is finally dropping their proposed changes to Title IX. And former Trump EPA transition team member Steve Malloy will debunk some of the left's most common global warming myths. And I'm actually planning to ask him what he thinks about the city of Wichita's climate change plan. He's a climate change expert. He's been analyzing climate data for decades. Very curious to hear what he thinks about Wichita's climate change plan, because, you know, there's so much the city of Wichita can do about global warming and whatnot. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls at 316-869-1330. This time of year, a lot of folks do their New Year's resolutions. In 2019, extensive research was conducted by Strava, which is a social network for athletes. And it was found that approximately 80% of people who made New Year's resolutions have tapped out by the second week of January. Quitters, basically. But again, that's 80% of Americans. Making deductions from the available 800 million user logged activities on Strava, they went on to then predict that the second Friday of January was basically quitter's day, is what they called it. The main areas of focus for resolutions involve exercise and eating habits and weight loss, that kind of stuff. By the way, quitter's day, they now have dubbed the second Friday in January as quitter's day, because about the time people give up on their resolutions. So let's be honest, New Year's resolutions are useless. So I'm not going to encourage Republicans to follow up with any New Year's resolutions. But what we do need in 2025 from every Republican, conservative, or moderate is not a resolution that will be history in 10 days, but a commitment that we will have, that will have rather true staying power. I mean, I know we're excited, giddy, for lack of a better term, with enthusiasm and determination to show that, you know, we support President-elect Donald Trump. We're excited by the transition. I know people who are going to the inauguration. I can't afford it, but I know people who are going. You know, we turn on the news daily to see what out-of-the-box idea he's floating on that day. You know, are we taking Canada for the 51st state, or are we taking back the Panama Canal? Is he going to buy Greenland? And frankly, I've begun to think that Trump is not floating random thoughts, but rather trolling Democrats and the media, who just are absolutely going crazy trying to respond to this stuff. But it's really quite humorous, as Democrats can't decide if Trump's unhinged or being manipulated by Musk and Ramaswamy. He's got them completely off guard, and frankly, that's perfect. That's just what he wants. Yeah, do I think that Donald Trump wants us to buy Greenland? No. Are we going to take Canada for our 51st state? No. Why would we want it? They've got massive debt. They give universal health care. A bunch of liberals. We don't want that state. They can keep it. It'd be like having another California. But it's fun to have the left trolling about it. Donald Trump is living rent-free in their minds. But we need a commitment to stay the course. We need to remain united and give Trump the support to get his administration out of the gates quickly and give us the most successful first 100 days ever promised. We don't need battles in the House to replace Speaker Mike Johnson, regardless of his actions on the continuing resolution. I mean, keep in mind, folks, no one wants the job of being Speaker. And Johnson has the demeanor, the courage, the moral character, and moral fiber to do the job nobody else on the right side of the aisle wants. We sure as hell don't want Hakeem Jeffries in that role. So leave him alone, move on, and get on to the work at hand. Here in Kansas, we need elected Republicans locally and in Topeka to cut spending and taxes, both of which are core GOP principles. And if they don't, we need to be resolved to hold them accountable. Statewide, Republicans need, again, it's not a resolution, but we just need to be affirmed that we will right the ship at the Kansas Republican Party and vote out Mike Brown and put in a slate that can end the chaos and unite the GOP. Party leaders also need to focus on recruiting candidates that can win next year's local elections. We can have, you know, contested primaries. That's fine. But afterwards, we need to unite behind our candidates in the general election. Stop this nonsense of bickering when we get to the general and unite. That's how we got 4 more years of Laura Kelly. These are important races. We need to continue to fight for our conservative principles at the local level as much as we do at the national level. And we need to call and write and fax our support and post on social media our support for Trump's nominees to our senators, regardless of their party. That means let Sharice Davids know. Let Democrats know. We need to flood their inboxes to drive home the fact that we wanted Trump and his team, period. He should get the cabinet he wants. And we need to drown out the noise from the left, including the media, with our chorus of support on our social media platforms and websites. So that's the resolution. It's not necessarily a resolution. It's just a commitment to continue our drive, our desire, our promise to make America great again. So no resolutions. Diet and exercise are all good causes. But this year, we need to put them on the back burner and make this country great again on the front burner, and then crank up the heat. Recently, the Senate Judiciary Committee held hearings on biological males competing in women's sports. We're still having to debate this issue. During the hearing, Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana challenged NCAA President Charlie Baker over policies allowing biological men to compete against women and called him out for his lack of leadership.
Well, why don't you exhibit leadership and demonstrate leadership and provide clarity? If you agree with me,
well, first of all,
the purpose of the NCAA is to promote fair competition. And if you agree with me that in every single instance, a biological male is going to have an unfair advantage over a biological female, then why don't you just say, look, in America you can be whomever you want to be, but in terms of fair competition and a collegiate sport, transgender women who are biological males are not going to be allowed to compete against non-transgender women who are biological female. Boom, done. Why don't you go to Amazon and buy a spine online and take a stand?
You gotta love Edward Kennedy. I'll tell you, he says it so well. With us now to kind of shed some light on this topic is Riley Gaines Center Ambassador Paula Scanlon. Paula, thank you for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, this, I gotta tell you, that is so simple if you actually believe. And earlier in that conversation, or grilling, shall we say, the NCAA president actually admitted that biological males do have a competitive advantage, and yet he still couldn't bring himself to say that what the NCAA does is unfair.
Absolutely. I mean, again, this has been the message that they've been sending very clearly, that they do not care about this. They do not care about the real women that are affected. They just want no responsibility. They want to pretend like this is not happening. It doesn't matter how obvious it is. It doesn't matter who tells them. They want no responsibility in this. And again, Charlie Baker doing exactly that made that very clear.
Why has this, I mean, we obviously know why this is continuing to become a problem. You would think after the last election that the NCAA would realize that there is a wave, a red wave, that has coursed through the country, but yet the NCAA still can't see the writing on the wall, can they?
I think that they can. I think at this point in time, I don't care really where you stand politically or how you voted or what your day-to-day life looks like. I think everyone knows that men and women are different, that males have athletic advantages to females. But it's not so much that they can't see it or they don't know, because they do know. It's that they don't want to take responsibility. They don't want to be sued by that really loud small group of people that are radical, believing that men and women are magically the same and a man can be a woman if he just simply says he identifies as one. And they're afraid, but the truth is they should be afraid of getting sued by the female athletes that have lost opportunities. And I think that's really what's starting to happen here, is we're actually fighting back. We're suing them. And so regardless of what the outcome is, they are going to have to do the right thing, because they're going to get sued either way by either group. And it's time that they stand up and take a stand. But again, I think it's just fear of that really small group of people that's very loud.
I love the way you put that, because this is a very loud, albeit minority, but they are very loud minority. We are starting to see women's groups push back on this. Look at Boise State University. It's unfortunate that they had to do what they did. I mean, it took them having to forfeit how many games before this started to draw attention, and yet I also felt sorry for them. They lost out on an opportunity to compete for a national championship, but by doing so, they really shone the light on how unfair it was that they were being forced to compete with a biological male.
Yeah, again, and those group of girls that boycotted, and there's other schools that did the same thing. I mean, that is what we have to be doing here. And it needs to be so embarrassing for the NCAA and the leagues that allow this to happen, that they need to want to do something. And that's really why, again, these boycotts, people are always saying, oh, well, the girls don't get to compete. But unfortunately, we have to sacrifice something. We have to stand up and say enough is enough. And I think, again, boycotting has been really an effective way. There's been so much attention about it. And it's made the NCAA at least have to look at the situation, whether or not they step in and do the right thing, which they still haven't. It at least makes them say, oh, shoot, we might have a situation where you know, a championship is completely forfeited. And that would be a really big statement.
Why is the NCAA continuing to push back on this? What is it? What's going to have to happen here? Is the new administration, is the Trump administration going to have to withhold funds from these universities? What's going to have to change before they finally do the right thing?
I think that what's going to have to, I mean, I don't know what they need to see at this point. I mean, I think we already saw Leah Thomas, a 6'4" tall man who was my teammate, win an NCAA championship. I mean, if that was not enough for them, I don't know what will be. But I think that, yes, I never really thought about that. Yeah, I think we should withhold funds from universities that are allowing men to be on women's sports teams. Absolutely, we should do that. And so maybe that's something we should bring into the new administration and hope for change. But again, it's just sad. They're just cowards. I think that's the best way to put it. I mean, I think that Charlie Baker himself, president of the NCAA, knows the differences between men and women. I think he knows that men don't belong in women's sports, but he's too big of a coward to do anything about it. And that is how we got ourselves into the situation to begin with, because people who were in positions of power were afraid to say no. And the whole Leah Thomas situation I experienced every single time this has happened could have been stopped if one person in power stepped in and said, hey, you can't do that. This is a terrible idea. You're welcome in the men's category. Please stay there.
We're talking with Riley Gaines Center Ambassador Paula Scanlon. Paula, you mentioned Leah Thomas and that situation. We've had Riley on the show a couple of times. She was here in Wichita not too long ago. This is a personal story for you, though, as well. And I've talked to Riley a couple of times about having to share a locker room with him. But that was only on a rare occasion. I mean, she only had to compete with him once or twice. You had to share that. I mean, he was a teammate of yours, correct?
Yes, and more to that, this was not something we were doing once or twice. We were undressing in a locker room with him 18 times per week because there's 9 practices a week and you change in and change out. And swimming is not a sport where you can simply walk out of practice and go home. You have to completely undress because you're in a soaking wet bathing suit. And so you're very exposed for a very long period of time over many weeks and months that the season lasts for.
And he's, just to make sure, and I don't necessarily mean to be overly graphic here, but he's fully intact. He's a, for all lack of, I mean, let's just be honest, he's a dude. He's a guy. He's got all of his junk. He's just right there letting it all hang out, for lack of, and Riley, I mean, from what I understand, as she's explained it to me, getting in and out of a women's swimming outfit is not something that happens quickly, correct?
Yes, racing suits take at least 20 minutes to get on. It's not a quick process.
Did you guys ever go to the university and say, hey, we're not comfortable here? What was their response when you did that?
Yeah, we did go to the university, and they told us we were hateful and bigoted. They said we would be on the wrong side of history. They compared not wanting to undress with a fully intact male as not wanting to undress with somebody based on their race. And the last thing they told us, which I thought was the most ridiculous, they said, okay, if all this is not enough, here is the number for an on-campus counselor. Please seek therapy because you are the problem and you need help.
Wait a second. Race. Leah Thomas is white. He's a 6-foot-tall white male. How did race get into this? I mean,
I'm actually Asian, also white. So I'm completely split down the middle. So to my response to them, do you want me to cut myself in half and change in 2 different locker rooms? I mean, it's a terrible argument.
I mean, how does race even play? I just don't understand.
That's what they said. That's what they told us. They compared it to not wanting to undress. They said it's the next civil rights movement. And they said, you know, you're going to be the people who are known for not wanting to undress with people based on race, which happened back in the day. Horrible thing. But again, that is a very different concept than your sex. And additionally, right, I am a completely mixed race individual. I'm 50-50 down the line. Mixed race. What do you want me to do? Like, it was the worst argument I ever heard. But nobody wants to be called a racist. So somehow they're bringing that into this.
The whole thing is just so asinine. And yet, the university, and you were the ones who were called bigots. And this is why I'm so glad that I mean, heaven forbid what would have happened had Kamala Harris won, because I think we would have absolutely seen the national policy move even more in this direction. And fortunately, I think as soon as President Trump has the ability to do so, he will undo the changes that the Biden White House has made to Title IX. But if that hadn't happened, if we hadn't won the election, Lord knows how Title IX would have been affected.
Exactly. But I mean, I'm really happy we have. But I do want to make it clear the work is not done yet. Do not be sitting back and saying, well, we have the presidency, so all this stuff is going to be great. We have to continue to work on this, because who's to say what's going to happen in 4 years? I can't predict the future. I would love for us to stay in power in 2028, but I don't know that. So right now it's really important we pass federal legislation, which I know Trump will do, but also work on this in the state level and your local level. Make sure that your local school boards don't have crazies that are doing this. I mean, there are across the country. I get reached out to by these people in local school boards saying our school boards are allowing, you know, litter boxes because they have kids who identify as animals. They're allowing boys in the girls' elementary school bathrooms. I mean, it is crazy. So this is so important to still continue to stand up at your local level. If you see this issue in sports, reach out to us at the Riley Gaines Center. We want to help you. We want to raise awareness. We want to continue to make change on this issue. And the work is not done yet. We will still see this continuing to happen, because crazy people will always try to do crazy things.
Paula, thank you again for joining us. If folks want information, they can reach out. It's the Riley Gaines Center, and it's RileyGainesCenter.org online, correct?
Yes. That's perfect.
I appreciate you. Thank you again. I hope you had a Merry Christmas and have a very happy New Year, my friend.
Thank you very much. You too.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, I'm sure it was a challenging task, but an esteemed panel, okay, well, knowing who's on this panel, it's not that esteemed, but an esteemed panel led by MRC President Brent Bozell, and including our friend Curtis Houck, has once again boiled down all the biased outbursts from lefty hacks, anchors, reporters, and pundits in 2024, and awarded the Brian Stelter Award for Worst Quote of the Year. With us now to tell us about who the winner is Newsbusters Managing Editor Curtis Houck. Curtis, Merry Christmas and a future Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Merry Happy Ho-Ho, my friend.
Merry Happy Ho-Ho. So before we announce the winner, we're going to play the clips of the runners-up.
I also was thinking about Joe Biden's legacy. He will be remembered as a great president. He will be mentioned in the same sentence as George Washington.
It scared me, honestly. You know, I didn't think ever in my lifetime I would see that. He is using that kind of World War II rhetoric that led to the deaths of the murders of 6 million people.
There is an entire right-wing media ecosystem.
Yes.
It doesn't exist on the left.
Yes.
It does not exist in the center or mainstream. Yep. And people are getting their information in very different ways now, whether it was disinformation, misinformation, or different propaganda that they were feeding to the American public.
So let's take those in reverse order. Anything that isn't MSLGBTV is misinformation or disinformation, basically, is what they're saying, right?
Yeah, the irony of that being, all right, so this was Lauren Bellon Lopez on CNN's Inside Politics. She's a CNN political analyst who used to write for Politico, but is now also with the PBS NewsHour. So literally, she's like represents all layers of the liberal Borg in the liberal media.
Right.
And why they need to be defunded. Of course, but leave it to someone in public broadcasting. It's like, oh, talk about ecosystems. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Sonny Hostin here. Next. And Lauren Barone Lopez, that was the day after the election, if you couldn't tell.
Right. Yeah. Well, I could tell. Trust me.
Yeah. The Sonny Hostin comment came March 18th, and that had to do with the bloodbath hullabaloo, the fake news about that.
When he was talking about the auto industry, but then they tried to equate that to him saying, if I lose, it's going to be a bloodbath because Republicans are going to, I guess, take out their guns and their Bibles and start shooting them at people.
Yes, the blood in the streets. Yes, yes.
Right, right. And then the first one, equating Joe Biden to George Washington.
I'm glad I'm on with you tonight of all nights with Jonathan Alter there, the Newsweek editor. His daughter, Charlotte Alter, writes for Time Magazine now. He said all sorts of crazy things about Barack Obama. He was a prominent feature this afternoon on MSNBC's coverage of Jimmy Carter, who said that he wasn't just an inspirational former president, but he was an outstanding president if measured by a certain historical yardstick. And he was substantive and in many ways a visionary success. Mm. So this guy is ripe. He's rife. He's bursting at the seams with all sorts of insane historical comparisons. And those are the kind of smug, pompous pricks that I just cannot stand.
Well, that reminds me when Nancy Pelosi said Joe Biden should be on Mount Rushmore. You know, I mean, it's same kind of people. All right, so now we're going to play the clip that led to our winner. So, Andrew, if you would please, sir.
I've spent a good bit of time with Joe Biden. He's far beyond cogent. In fact, I think he's better than he's ever been. Intellectually, analytically, start your tape right now because I'm about to tell you the truth. And F you if you can't handle the truth.
Oh, he's so tough.
Of Biden, intellectually, analytically, is the best Biden ever. Not a close second. And I've known him for years. The Brzezinskis have known him for 50 years. If it weren't the truth, I wouldn't say it.
If this is the best Biden ever, then Joe Biden's, I mean, okay, well, first off, that's your winner, Joe Scarborough, which I guess makes him back-to-back winners.
Yes.
But this is the best version of Joe Biden. Does Joe, first off, Curtis, you've been in this industry a long time. Does Joe Scarborough actually believe that?
I was asked this previously last week, and my answer stays the same. I think he is trying to will himself into believing.
Okay, got it. Okay.
I don't necessarily mean he's like a true, I would say people like Joy Reid are like, you know, true believers. And you also, I think, have some liberal journalists that know a lot, some of the things they're pushing are full of it. I think Scarborough's kind of in the middle. It's just truly remarkable. I feel like if you have to go to that level of depth, John, to explain and insist that someone's cogent, they're probably not.
Right, right. Well, this is
Bill Clinton saying I didn't have sexual relations.
Right.
Oh, I did not.
Right. I did not like, have sexual relations
with
that woman. Yes. Yeah. Miss Lansky. Yeah. I mean, it's the funny thing is, and I, by the way, we're talking with Curtis Houck, managing editor from Newsbusters. The funny thing is here, Curtis, and I've made this point quite a bit lately. And then ironic that you guys chose that particular clip. But the left has been trying to say for years that Trump was responsible for the big lie. You know, they the whole Russia, and all that. And yet this, without a doubt, has to be the biggest lie ever told. And now we've got this Wall Street Journal piece that just came out where the White House aides hid Biden's mental decline from day one. You've got the, you know, his good days and bad days comment. There is no doubt that this is the worst lie ever told. And yet the media is not really covering this.
No, I mean, there's no level of curiosity. That story, the Wall Street Journal story, did not get mentioned on ABC, CBS or NBC. Conversely, there has not been any coverage thus far of the fine story that you know, the government finally released photos of Hunter and Joe with the Chinese.
Right. Which, by the way, happened, ironically, 11 years ago, right within that window of the pardon, I notice. I'm sure that's just coincidence, though, right? I mean, it's just purely coincidence.
Totally fine, John. So there's no sort of like interest on that front, which is kind of crazy. And then you have you look at everything here. I've been equating this, making a historical comparison, John. I've been saying that this is going to go down like with FDR and his health problems and his womanizing, with JFK and his drug problem and the womanizing, and Woodrow Wilson, even the things you read about how people knew that he was kind of gone and that his wife was really running things the last few years. It's very similar. And I think that's what we're going to see years from now. And there will be no level of contrition because the left will say, hey, we got what we wanted. So, you know, screw off.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to make the same claims about Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan, but there's never been any evidence that Ronald Reagan was diminished to that capacity. Yes, Nancy protected him, I think, but I think Nancy always protected him. But I don't
that was pretty consistent.
Yeah, I don't think there was any evidence that Ronnie was diminished. Not like this. Joe Biden is clearly diminished. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the guy can't walk a straight line without having tape on the floor. It's blatantly obvious.
It is. And so I just have to say that this is a generational scandal that we're going to remember for some time. And the media will come around to it as well. And they'll kind of say, well, you know,
and here's the other thing about this. Had he not lost a debate, they'd have run him again. What does that say? Had that debate not gone the way it had, or had for some reason that debate been canceled, Joe Biden would have been their nominee and they would have been fine with it. What does that say about their party?
Well, they tried a Monday morning quarterback this and they said, they did the right thing. No, they didn't. Like, at all.
Yeah, it wasn't the corruption
became obvious to everyone else.
Yeah, it's really staggering when you think about it in that context that the people who knew, the powers within the Democrat National Party that knew, that had to know, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, that inner circle, Ron Klain, the people who the power brokers behind their party who've known about it all along, ran him anyway and were content with it.
They ran him anyway. The Wall Street Journal story begins by talking about campaign trips.
Yep.
And someone pointed out that Jill had done more stops than Joe had, and they were admonished for that.
Right. Yeah, because she's more popular. We don't want her out there.
And this was 29. You know, this was probably the early parts of the primary, so that was probably like 2019.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's shocking. But it is, you know, at least, well, we won, so I guess we could take that. But it is scary when you think the bullet that we dodged. Curtis, I appreciate you, brother. Wish you happy new year. If folks want to connect with you, if they want to see some of these clips that we just played, they can find that at newsbusters.org, correct?
Yes, and my colleague Jeffrey Dickens, if you click his name in that blog about worst quote of the year, you'll find all sorts of other categories, including damn those conservatives and propping up old Joe, as we just discussed.
Propping up old Joe. Appreciate you, brother. Have a happy new year, my friend.
Happy new year. Carry on, gang.
So one of the stories that I try to cover every year when he releases it is Senator Rand Paul's annual Festivus report. Those of you who remember the Seinfeld show, Festivus was the fake holiday that was created on that show. And so every year, Rand Paul releases his annual Festivus report. And it's a report of basically government waste, excessive spending at the federal level. This year's report contained over $1 trillion in wasteful spending. And trust me, I'm sure they don't have any trouble finding wasteful spending. But this year they highlighted over $1 trillion in government waste. And I'm just going to read you some of these. like, for example, the federal government. I mean, some of this stuff is just is laughable. Department of Interior spent $12 million on a Las Vegas pickleball complex. And keep in mind, every one of these things was put in an appropriation or spending bill by a member of Congress. So, you know, like that piece right there, I guarantee you that one of the senator or congressperson from the Las Vegas area put that in. So, you know, your tax dollars are going for $12 million for a pickleball complex in Las Vegas. Department of State, they're one of the biggest perpetrators on this list. $330,000 to fund censorship of non-liberal and conservative media. That's an appropriate use of money. The Department of Health and Human Services awarded a $2 million grant to study kids looking at Facebook ads about food, because I guess that's, you know, money well spent there. yeah. Speaking of the Department of Health and Human Services, they spent $419,000 to determine if lonely rats seek cocaine more than happy rats. I guess, you know, coked up rats. Go figure. You can't make this stuff up. You really can't. The National Endowment of Arts spent $365,000 to promote circuses in city parks. The Department of State spent $3 million for girl-centered climate action in Brazil. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff in other states and other countries, for that matter. The Department of State spent $2.1 million for Paraguayan border security. Now, keep in mind, federal government, the Democrats don't want to spend any money on our border, but they'll spend $2.1 million for Paraguayan border security. Mm-hmm. National Science Foundation spent $288,000 to ensure birdwatching groups have safe spaces. Don't have any idea why we need that, but, you know, hey, what do I know? I think that's a waste of money, but the Department of Agriculture is spending $20 million on the Fertile Rights Initiative to advance fertilizer use in Pakistan, Vietnam, Colombia, and Brazil. Well, that's a lot of crap being spread around with our taxpayer money right there. That's a great use of money. Here's a great one. The Agency for International Development, USAID, is spending $20 million on Aham Issam. It's a new Sesame Street show in Iraq. So, yeah, they're $20 million to do Sesame Street in Iraq. Again, you can't make some of this stuff up. I wish you could, because it's laughable, but unfortunately, you can't. Ukrainian influencers, $4.8 million for influencers, social media influencers in Ukraine. There's the Royal Film Commission spent $873 million for movies in Jordan. I don't know why we need to spend that in Jordan, but some member of Congress is no doubt getting a kickback somewhere in order to do that. But there's one that really just sticks out as one of my favorites that you just can't. It's one that I just think is a typical example of government, and that's the money spent for the Bearded Ladies drag show on ice. Folks, this is your federal government at work.
Congressman, I appreciate you taking a little bit of time today. Thank you for coming to the Sedgwick County holiday party. Well, I guess it was half your party, so thank you for coming to your party and joining us. But I appreciate you taking time to sitting down with us today. Let me start with you guys, much like the Kansas legislature goes back, you actually back in session really quick, just right after the first of the year, correct?
That's right, John, and it was great seeing you at the the Christmas party, New Year's Eve party, or New Year's party. We go back constitutionally. The House of Representatives and the Senate get sworn in on the 3rd of January every year.
And your so, first thing you have to do is elect a speaker.
First thing we have to do in the House is elect a speaker, because that's the process actually before we get sworn in. That's part of the dynamic. So we'll go through the election process and elect Mike Johnson speaker to help lead us forward for the next 2 years. And
I'm not going to ask you who you're going to vote for, but there's a whole process, and it's very interesting. You were telling me that you guys actually become Congress, you get to start the new Congress, Joe Biden's still president at that point.
Yeah, so really just looking at the timeline is next Friday, the 3rd of January, we're all sworn in. We take office, both the House and the Senate, the new House and the Senate. And then Monday, the 6th, we'll receive the electoral votes to officially elect Donald J. Trump to be the 47th president of the United States. And then for the next 2 weeks, before President Trump's inauguration on January 20th, we'll have the new House, the new Senate, and yet President Biden will still be in office for 2 weeks. So we'll actually start working on things. That's part of what we're going to be working on. We're working through the weekend, next weekend, to start laying out dynamics and plans for what do we want to do on reconciliation? How do we fix so many of the things that President Biden broke over the last 4 years? Yeah, I mean, there's a whole huge list. I mean, you start with a deficit and how bad that is and what we need to do there. Talk about the border and the security on the border and the energy policy, what we want to do there. And then of course, taxes. I mean, President Biden said that he wanted to allow the Trump tax cuts to expire.
Right, which means
everybody in Kansas will get the average household will get a $2,200 tax increase if that process is followed.
Yeah, so, you've been on the show and told us about that before. And, you know, assumes Joe Biden's back from his, 40th vacation or 40% rather of his entire administration. He's been on vacation. Let me ask you a little bit about that, about the damage that Joe Biden has done. We've just seen here in the last month alone, he's given trillions of dollars away. Again, or not trillions, but billions of dollars away, more money to Ukraine. All of this is foreign aid that he's given away. $750 to the folks in North Carolina dealing with a hurricane, but Ukraine gets another $1 billion. There's been rumors that he wants to do more to give aid to illegals. There's been also talk about other aid that he wants to do. Do you have any fears that in those last 2 weeks of his administration, he's going to do more damage on his way out the door?
Yeah. He really is going to go down as just a failed president going through this process. I mean, you can talk about all these issues over the last 4 years, but you just look at the last month and a half in terms of things that happened. A pardon for his son, Hunter, a preemptive pardon over anything that he might have done, which was broader than any pardon that's ever been done by a president. And then 1,500 pardons and commutations that he's done, just willy-nilly. He's did 37 murderers that are convicted under federal law, commuted their death sentences over to life.
One of them was a guy who was a Hamas fundraiser.
And the sad part about it is, if he wants to make the argument that he's opposed to the death penalty, then he should have commuted everybody. But he picked and chose through that group who to commute those sentences to, and left others to stand up for the death penalty. All of the money that they're pushing out the door, they're spending all of this money willy-nilly on different programs, trying to put in place all these rules and regulations that they can get into effect that will be lasting. What was it? Last week, the Social Security Administration supposedly signed an agreement with the union to allow them 5 years worth of work from home, the majority of the time work from home, which is just, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's the problem we have now, is that after COVID, so many of these federal employees have not come back to work, and we have half-empty buildings littered throughout Washington, D.C.
I did a story on that actually last week, where originally for the last 4 years, prior to the Biden administration, under Trump, it was about 3% of the federal workforce. Now it's upwards over 30% of the federal workforce works from home, and there are cases of people, they found one lady who was actually taking baths while she was at quote-unquote work. Is there anything the Trump administration can do about that 5-year contract, or
Yeah, there's a whole lot of it as we dig into what's out there. I mean, just looking at that, I mean, why do we have all these buildings that we're paying rent and utilities on if people aren't going to come to work? Not to mention the fact of, you know, the IRS paperwork that's not getting done, the
right.
Social Security paperwork that's not being done, and people being applying for Social Security, and the job that these people were hired for. And granted, there's always going to be some roles, a very small number, that don't work in an office because they're in the field or doing work out and about. And that makes sense. But to just have this blanket that so many people don't have to work because they can sit at home and get a paycheck that's paid for by the taxpayers is wrong. And we've got to fix that.
This is a perfect example of what hopefully the new DOGE, the new Department of Government Efficiency, can handle. You recently wrote an op-ed that was right along these lines. Look, see, that's a segue there. That's why they pay me the big bucks. But you wrote an op-ed on this very topic, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I mentioned earlier about the number of buildings that are vacant and we're paying utilities on. But you also look at right now, there's supposedly 50% of the workforce is supposed to be working in the office. That was a Office of Management and Budget recommendation. I asked the IRS commissioner whether that was being followed, and he says, yes, I'm sure we're following that guideline. Later that same day, he sent out a notice to all his employees saying, making sure that we are following that guideline. So he had no idea. In fact, I mean, whether he lied to me when he made that statement. And so the DOGE, as we're looking at how do we come up with government efficiency, there's a lot of things we can do, ranging from the number of federal employees, the number of rules and regulations we're making, the number of building and land that the federal government owns. Why don't we sell that off and actually make some money to pay down the debt? But at the same time, we can actually put it into productive use, and the purchasers then have to pay taxes on the property.
There's a novel concept.
It's a double benefit through that process. I know we're going to be fought all the way as we go through looking for efficiencies in government. I'm part of the House DOGE caucus as we look through things. And I use this as an example. We use this in the op-ed and some other places, is that there are 3 million federal employees, if you count the Postal Service, but you exclude the military. So 3 million civilian employees. And in the legislative branch, it's right at 1% of that. So as we argue about why we need to downsize government and make government more efficient, we're going to be fighting against 3 million employees that talk about, I need to keep my job. They need to keep their role. They want to support the bureaucracy. So it's going to be an ongoing effort that we got to go make through. And I'm an advocate that we should have a government. We should have a federal government that supports us, and it should be limited, and it should provide its functions efficiently and effectively.
We're talking with Congressman Ron Estes. Your majority has smaller than it was, not by much, but I think you had 5 or 4 votes before. Now you're down to 2 right now because there's a vacancy in Florida. Assuming that gets solved within, say, 4 or 5 months, it's still a very thin majority. What's it like dealing with the other side of the aisle, dealing with Hakeem Jeffries? I mean, do you think you can reasonably get something done and something accomplished this year?
You know, probably one of the things that's most disappointing for me in the seven and a half years I've been in Congress is that there's so many people there that view what helps them politically instead of what's good for the country. And unfortunately, when we talk about working in across the aisle on good policy, it's not about what this particular issue we're trying to solve, how do we solve it and move forward. It's, no, you want to solve that issue, what are you going to give me for it, and to work together. And that's why you end up having bloated continuing resolutions, the CRs, that spend on all sorts of things. I mean, the state of Maryland did not want to pay their fair share for the construction of the bridge that was knocked down. Every other state has to pay, you know, a 20% match,
right,
versus the federal government paying 8%. But they demanded that as part of voting for the continuing resolution that 100% of the funding be paid for by the federal taxpayers, which means people in Kansas are paying 100% to rebuild a bridge in Maryland because the people in Maryland did not want to pay their fair share.
Well, and you know, you see, I don't know if you saw Rand Paul recently published his annual Festivus report, and it had $1 trillion worth of wasteful spending. And that, I think that leads right to what you're talking about. And I point out, I was recently filling in for Pete Mundo up in KCMO, and we did a couple of different segments on this where there's all kinds of examples of waste. And the sad part is every one of these projects were put in by, no offense, but your colleagues, because a lot of that stuff got put in there. It wasn't put in there magically. Somebody had to put that little bit of spending package in there. And that's from both sides of the aisle. But I also have to say that part of the problem from my perspective as an outsider is the leader on the other side, Hakeem Jeffries, every time he goes to a mic, the first words out of his mouth are MAGA extremists. So that doesn't help either when your opposition is labeling you and marginalizing you every chance he gets.
That's right. The political environments, you don't talk about the issues. They want to talk about demonizing somebody else and criticizing them. And part of it goes back to, as I said, I believe there's a role for the government, but it should be limited, just like our founding father said. And unfortunately, over the last 100-plus years, our federal government in particular has grown to be a big monster. And you know, at the end of the day now, what we're seeing is taxes are taking from citizens in Kansas through the federal up to the Washington, D.C., and then sent back to some program in Kansas or some other state. So we've just gotten too big in terms of those programs. We should move more and more of those programs to the state level or the local level where better decisions can be made. And at the end of the day, it's the same taxpayers. I mean, the same people that are paying taxes, or whether they pay it federal taxes or whether they pay it at the local level, at the state level, they can make a better decision about that program and how to use it instead of a one size fits all coming out of Washington or some stupid ideas like Senator Paul mentioned in terms of a bearded ladies
drag show
on ice skates talking about the climate.
Yes.
And to have a grant from the federal government to do that.
Or the new Sesame Street show in Baghdad.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, that we're paying for.
Literally millions of dollars being paid wasted on that.
The State Department paid for that.
Programs. So we've got to stop that at the federal level. We need to downsize all of those programs at the federal level. If they make sense, a state wants to do it or a local government wants to do it, they can. But let's get out of expecting that federal tax dollars should go to Washington so that it becomes a magic tree. And because unfortunately, it's not, taxes aren't paying for all of it now. We're actually borrowing from the future, borrowing from the kids and grandkids. So they will have less of an opportunity because they'll have to pay back for the lifestyle that people wanted to live today.
Yeah, I've been doing this over 6 years now, and you've been coming on the show over 6 years now. You've got a Republican president, Republican Senate, Republican House. I guarantee you, every time we've had one of these conversations over the last 6 years, you've talked about the hope of moving to regular order. Do you think maybe there's a chance that you'll finally get what you want?
I think part of that is an ongoing work. I don't think it's all going to magically happen because we've had 30-plus years almost 30 years of where the federal budget, the appropriations was not done on time for the entire federal government. So there's a lot of bad habits that have been built up. So it's going to take some time to sort through that. I do think it's an opportunity with us in the majority, maybe more so than we were 8 years ago when President Trump was first elected, because there wasn't an expectation that that was going to happen. Now we're starting to lay the groundwork and to be able to work with our Republican majority. And if the Democrats want to join us, fine. I don't expect they'll join on many of those things, but we have to work through the reconciliation process, which by the Senate rules around the filibuster, you can do some things dealing with taxes and spending. You can't necessarily change policy, but you can actually address some of the tax and spend issues, and that's what we've got to get working on.
Well, I wish you the best of luck. Happy New Year again. And real quick, if folks want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
So the best way to do it, if you want to reach out for us officially, is estes.house.gov. to reach me on the official side, or if you want to reach on the campaign side, EstesForCongress.com is our unofficial campaign website. We don't sell your email address. If you want to sign up for a newsletter, you kind of get some information. Like on the unofficial side, you get the Ron's Reads, which
your emails are fantastic. Those Ron's Reads are great. I get them every week. I highly encourage people to subscribe.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
It's always a pleasure to sit down with the congressman. It was nice to sit down with him yesterday and have that opportunity to chat with him. And, you know, they've got a lot on their plate. Well, I hope we have a speaker come next Friday. There's an interesting article today that came out. Many news outlets have covered it. A Republican representative, Mike Lawler, came out in response to there's been one GOP rep so far who has said he will not support Speaker Mike Johnson again. He only can get two, by the way. If he gets two, no votes, he's out. So he's there, basically. He gets one more, he's done. But Mike Lawler argued today that Mike Johnson should be reelected as Speaker of the House despite Republican infighting on the spending bill, that CR. And I talked to Ron. I asked him, you know, what he thought of the CR. He said, you know, it never came up for a vote, the first one. Had it, he would have voted no because it was laden with a bunch of Democrat wish list items. It was a joke. And I was glad to hear Ron say that. It didn't surprise me at all. I had a feeling there was no way that Ron would have voted for that nonsense. But Lawler goes on to say that Johnson inherited a disaster when former Rep. Matt Gaetz and several colleagues teamed up with the Democrats to remove McCarthy. And that, frankly, was one of the stupidest things that's ever been done because the chaos that came out of that, it's one of the reasons why I've never thought much of Matt Gaetz. I think he's just self-serving. And none of that was done for the best of the body. It was just spite. Matt Gaetz did that because Kevin McCarthy allowed an ethics investigation. Well, turns out the ethics investigation was right. Turns out Matt Gaetz was corrupt. Among other problems, criminal in my opinion, but either way, that was a personal vendetta, and it ended up costing McCarthy his speakership. But removing Mike Johnson would equally be stupid. The timing on this thing, they go back on Friday, this Friday, and first thing they have to do is pick a speaker. And then turn around on Monday, they have to certify the election. Well, if they don't have a speaker, they can't do the second. They can't certify the election because you can take no other business, no other action if the body is not in place. If there's no speaker, they can do no other order. No other business can be done in the House. So they can't certify the electors. So literally, it jams the whole thing up. And remember how long it took last time. Now, that's not saying it could take a month like it did the last time, but it could take time. And, I mean, you could even see a process where the Senate whip ends up being acting president because according to the Constitution, that's what would happen because they have to certify an election. And then they have to name a president. If the House can't name the current president, then they have to pick a president. And that would fall to the Senate. I believe it's Assistant Majority Leader or the whip or something. Literally, it would be a senator. I think it's Grassley is who it is. I mean, imagine how asinine this would be. If you don't like Mike Johnson, at least reelect him speaker, get this process done, and then kick him out. But, I mean, the fact that these folks are playing with fire, if they think that somehow it's going to get more conservative speaker, they're kidding themselves. And you certainly cannot question Mike Johnson's character, his integrity, his moral fortitude. I mean, it's nonsense. And again, Representative Thomas Massie has already said he will not support Johnson. And then there are a number of other GOP hardliners. And I'm a GOP hardliner, so what do I know? But there are a number of other GOP congressmen who've yet to commit. They've not said that they won't. They've just, they're holding their powder dry, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think one of the things that should happen is I think that the president-elect should come out publicly and endorse Johnson and get this over with, because really that's what needs to happen. We need to get on with the business of Trump's first 100 days. And the last thing he needs is for Congress to be bogged down in a speaker election for a month. So just get this out, get Mike Johnson reelected, and move on with the business at hand. That would be my recommendation, but then again, you know, the view is pretty good from the cheap seats.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Well, Elon Musk was once one of the most vocal global executives to promote and support the, quote, dangers of climate change. Previously, Musk called for popular uprising against the fossil fuel industry. But lately, he's changed, and he now says that climate change is plummeted as one of his list of priorities. With us now to talk about this change of heart is Steve Malloy. He's a senior E&E Legal Institute fellow and former Trump EPA transition team member. Pleasure to have you back on the show again, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Steve, let me ask, I mean, what do you think prompted this change of heart from Musk? Do you think it might be, is it financial related, or do you think he's just sort of had a come to Jesus?
Well, you know, it's hard to know for sure. Elon Musk has been pushing the climate hoax for many years. Certainly, I mean, he voted for Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. So,
yeah.
And I know earlier this year he released a couple videos on X narrating, you know, climate hysteria. But you know, since he decided that he was going to support Donald Trump, he's just kind of dropped all that. He has dropped material promoting Al Gore-type alarmism from Tesla shows. He doesn't really talk about climate or hasn't talked about it. He's okay with Donald Trump getting rid of the EV mandate. So I think he might be starting to figure out that climate hysteria is not really his friend, not really good for the country, not really good for the economy. It doesn't really help Tesla that much. Tesla was doing much better before Biden came in and all this, you know, EV mandate stuff took hold. I think people, you know, when Ford and GM start making EVs, I think it just kind of damages the EV, you know, the ideal of an EV. So I think he's quite happy with making, you know, high-end EVs and sell them as a, you know, consumer choice, which is fine.
Well, and, you know, one of the things, and people love to talk, people on the left certainly love to talk about electric vehicles and how great they are, but you and I remember the last time I had you on my show, we talked about the whole thing with the electric vehicles is we don't have a power grid that can anywhere near support the ability to charge the darn things.
Hmm. Yeah, no, we've seen this really written in spades in California.
Right.
Anytime, you know, they get near peak demand during a heat wave or something like that, the first thing that the state government does is tell people not to charge their EVs because they burden the grid. you know, and they burden the grid when the grid can least afford it. And at the same time, California has been destroying its grid, you know, making it more use more wind and solar, which are not reliable and can't adjust to peak load at all. So and just across the country, we're having a problem with, you know, utilities have been wrecking our grid with wind and solar stuff. And then Biden wants to mandate EVs so everybody would have to charge their, I mean, it just can't work.
So I'm glad you mentioned California. I wanted to ask you about something. And by the way, we're talking with former Trump EPA transition team member Steve Malloy. I just saw this story came out recently. The EPA has now given California the green light to pass a ban all gas cars by 2035.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, they're not going to go around and start confiscating people's, you know, gas cars. But I'm assuming what that means is that you wouldn't be able to buy any new gas vehicles at that point. I mean, what? How is this going to work? How is this even constitutional? Why? I don't understand this whole process.
Well, the whole thing is not constitutional. The Clean Air Act, which was passed in 1963 and amended a couple times since 1970, 1977, 1990. Allows California to set special air pollution standards, air quality standards, because California has special air quality conditions. You know, Los Angeles isn't a basin. The air has always been bad since the Spanish conquistadors sailed by in the 15th century. They noticed that California was, you know, the Los Angeles area had air pollution. So California has had the ability to set special air quality standards for itself. Now, the Biden administration has given California the authority to set special greenhouse gas emission standards for itself. And so, you know, because Joe Biden and his climate, you know, they can't ban gas-powered cars through the EPA, what they're hoping is that they can give California, you know, the ability to basically ban gas-powered cars in California, and that because they're banned in California, it's such a large part of, you know, our country, other blue states will join in and force car makers to not make gas-powered cars anymore. Now, when Donald Trump becomes president, one of the first things he's going to do is start the process to roll back California's ability to set special air quality standards for, you know, greenhouse gas emissions.
Let me ask you another question. By the way, you have a fantastic website. I want to recommend your Twitter feed is also excellent, by the way. It's junkscience.com. But one of the things that you do there that I love is you do a lot of debunking, of fact-checking, basically, some of the garbage that comes out from this the religion that is the environmental wacko crowd. One of the things that I noticed that you came out recently is, and you see it all the time, a lot of the people on the left, some of the people in this climate Nazi crowd like to talk about warmest Novembers in, you know, period, or warmest months ever. Recently, there was one that said the warmest November in Washington, D.C. We've seen it recently, too, where they point to that this was the warmest summer ever. That's, it's all quantitative, right? I mean, it's and it's all cyclical. Can you help me expose some of this nonsense?
Well, it's all imaginary. It's what it is. I do these things, you know, whenever it's particularly hot or cold or whatever, and that something that counters the narrative, because, you know, we're told that every emission warms the planet. That's why we have to get to net zero emissions.
Right.
So, you know, like so far, December in the United States has been cooler than December in 1981. Okay. So if every emission warms the planet, how is it possible that, you know, any part of December 2024 is cooler than December 1981? You know, 43 years worth of emissions. We're talking well over a trillion tons of emissions, and they've had no effect. As a matter of fact, it's cooler now than it was 43 years ago. It's crazy. So I just, you know, because, you know, anytime it's hot during the summer, they say, oh, this is global warming. So, you know, so I'm saying, well, anytime it's cooler now than it was 43 years ago, what is that? I have my, I think my favorite one on my website is there was a day in September when Washington, D.C. was like 30 degrees cooler than, you know, that day in September in 1874. So 150 years, you know,
right.
And if, and keep in mind, every emission not only causes warming, it causes more warming, it drives more warming. And I mean, this is climate dogma. And if that's true, well, where's the warming?
I want to point out before I ask this next question that you're a recognized leader in this field. You've been involved in climate science for, you got 33 years of experience. So I just want to point that out. This is a story that folks here in the Wichita area are going to be familiar with. But recently, the city of Wichita rolled out a city sustainability, a climate action plan. I know this is something you're not familiar with it at all. I'm sure the city of Wichita's plan. But it's something that the Sustainability Integration Board has rolled out.
Uh-huh.
And it follows a lot of what you've seen nationally. There's a lot of cities doing this kind of stuff. And the first thing that they did, keep in mind, you won't know this, but the city of Wichita is facing a budget shortfall. So the first thing that they've told everybody is that this is all federal grant money. It's was no local taxpayer dollars. Here's my question for you. There's never any of this federal money that doesn't come with strings attached, though. So at some point, Wichita taxpayers, when they roll this thing out, there's either going to be behavioral strings attached or monies that are going to have to be spent at some point, correct?
Generally speaking, you know, when Democrats try to ensnare red states with subsidies and taxpayer money, it's one of two things. It's either, yeah, they want to curb your behavior, or they're trying to buy your politicians.
Right.
So it's, you know, one of those two things. I think, you know, the question you have to start out asking is, how is Wichita going to affect the climate?
That's a good question.
What could Wichita, you know, Wichita, the earth could open up, swallow Wichita, and the climate would miss a heartbeat.
Well, I mean, yeah, they talk about their goal is to lower emissions by 50%. And I'm sitting here, you know, like, again, like you said, how is the city of Wichita going to lower global emissions? Again, it's I think a lot of this
it's
is
ridiculous.
Just right. Thank you. It's ridiculous. It's pandering is what it is.
No, but there's money in it for politicians and for local communities, and they don't really realize that when you take that money, I mean, they're going to get you now or they're going to get you later.
Right.
Now is they're going to control your behavior now, or later they're buying your politicians, and the politicians, to keep the money going, will, you know, agree to do something bad.
That's, there you go. You nailed it. Thank you. Steve, I appreciate you as always. If folks are interested, if they want to read some of your debunking, some of the exposing of this nonsense stories, they can find your information at junkscience.com, correct?
Yes, and on X at Junk Science.
I appreciate you, brother. As always, it's nice to have you on the show, my friend.
All right, John. Thank you very much.
Thanks, brother.
What, you mean there's corruption in government? No, say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so. I was speaking recently at the Kingman County GOP, and this concept of X, Twitter, came up. A lot of them aren't on Twitter. I really recommend that you get on it. Obviously, when you do, follow me at John R. Whitmer. But don't be afraid. It's really improved. Ever since Elon took over, it's really improved. Get on X. We need our voices there. We need to be active there. You need to be on social media, and you need to be pushing back on liberal narratives, because it's only through you getting active in organizations like AFP and KFL and the KSRA and your local party, and then being active on social media and writing letters to the editors and things like that. Those are the ways that we push back. So in 2025, get ready. Start getting activated. We've got, you know, spring elections, or not spring elections, well, unless you've got a referendum or something like we do, a ballot initiative. But or bond initiative, rather. But you've got local elections in the fall. And then, of course, in 26, we've got a governor's race that we have to be prepared for. So it's time to start thinking. Once 25 gets here, it's time to start getting activated and getting ready for these elections again. Don't forget as well my carry-on commentary. Those are 60-second daily features. You'll hear those every day, 5 days a week, three times a day here on KNSS. And starting January 12th, and once a month after that, we'll be broadcasting live from Topeka, thanks to my friends at Eck Insurance. If you'd like to be a sponsor for the John Whitmer Show, sponsorships are now available. For more information, you can email Tony at knssradio.com. One of the things you're going to hear me talking about a lot in the new year is the USD 259 school bond initiative. I have the pleasure of sharing that the superintendent has agreed to come on the show. So either the second or third week of January, we will have him on the show. We're going to try and give you, they're here to pitch the bond initiative. I will have, at some point, I'll have the opposition, because there is an organized opposition on, and we'll have them on as well. We'll give an equal platform. I've been very obvious and very clear about my opposition to the bond initiative. I don't think it's necessary, and I don't think the money's going to make a difference. But one of the things that Wichita Public Schools, in their argument for this tax increase, and again, this is a tax increase. A vote yes raises your property taxes by $450 million. Because keep in mind, in a matter of 2 years, your taxes go down. So voting no, you're giving yourself a tax cut. Just keep that in mind. Don't let anybody tell you that this is tax neutral, revenue neutral. It's not a tax increase. It is. Because for 28 years, your taxes will be cut. If you vote yes, your taxes go up for 28 years. If you vote no, your taxes go down for 28 years. It's that simple. But one of the other claims that they're making is that this will help to, one argument they're using is that the new buildings built from this construction funded by the bond will result in better student achievement. But that hasn't borne fruit in the past. Keep in mind, this bond is replacing the bond that was passed 20 years ago in 2008, the one that's expiring in 2028. In 2008, voters approved a bond to build new schools. And again, I'm sure back in 2008, they said the same thing. Oh, if you build these schools, it'll improve student achievement. However, if you look at data, and again, data doesn't lie, there has been no improvement in promised student achievement since 2008. Data from the Kansas Department of Education shows only 15-19% of Wichita Public School students are proficient in math, reading, or science. Furthermore, only 16% of graduating seniors are college and career ready. So catchy phrases like adequate classrooms and no tax increase aren't going to fool you. Don't let them fool you. Passing this school bond election doesn't get you student achievement. It doesn't get you better graduation or more quality graduates, kids who are college and career ready. It just gets you a tax increase, a $450 million tax increase. That's what you get out of it. And if they need this money so bad to build the new schools, let them find another way to do it within the existing budget. Look for some cuts. Look for some efficiencies. I guarantee you, in their massive budget, they've got ways to cut if they were forced to do so. That's the key. Right now, we just can't afford it. Folks are getting taxed out of their homes. But I wish you a very happy, safe, make sure you're safe in the new year. Have a very happy, safe new year. I wish you all the best in 2025, and we will talk to you again in 2025. Carry on.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.